The views given on the following program are not necessarily the views of the station management or staff. Since individual situations can and will be different, please remember this when exercising any options presented by our guests.
Success is equated with excess. The ambition for excess wrecks us. As the top of the mountain becomes the bottom line, where success is equated with excess.
This is Care for My Wealth. With Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management, your fee-only investment firm. Now, here's your Care for My Wealth guy, Chris Klein.
And happy Saturday morning to you. This is Care for My Wealth right here, Fox Sports 1070 The Game. Hanging out this Saturday morning with Mr. Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. You can learn more about Capstone Wealth Management, Chris and the team, all on the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Also follow Chris and the team on Twitter at careformywealth. Listen to the program this morning live on air. Welcome to the show. You can also listen to the podcast each and every week, whether it's iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, all the popular and your favorite podcast platforms. The show is available there. Also, you can ask your smart speaker as well to play the program. It's a really, really convenient thing. And don't forget to share the show as well with folks. Don't keep all this great information just for yourself. Again, this is Care for My Wealth right here, Fox Sports 1070 The Game. Chris, how you doing this morning? You ready for the new year?
Yeah, thank you. Happy New Year to you too, Sean. It's been an interesting, challenging type of year, and I suspect most investors are happy to see 2022 behind them. But as you know, our hope, our objective, our process, and, you know, 25 years of attempting to navigate this investment process and make through time and reps our process better and more valuable. My hope is to help everybody understand and be more macro aware so that they can take advantage of these cycles and come to understand that when we start talking about cycle phase changes, that we're serious. That these things, when they start shifting, matter. And you'll remember back in November, December, January, we were very serious about what the possibilities were in terms of a bear market. So, lots of stuff continue to happen and cycle out. You know, it's one of these kinds of areas, Sean, where it's really easy, I think, for investors, at least through 2022, I think it's been very easy for investors to disregard, maybe is the right word, or not trust what the Fed has been saying. And I find it to some extent sort of interesting, but yet at the same time, very problematic that so many investors, frankly, us included, have had to rely so very heavily on front-running the Federal Reserve. The problem has been is that most investors haven't listened to what the Fed has said. Remember my comment last week that one of my favorite quotes ever from Stephen Covey is, people don't listen with the intent to understand. They listen with the intent to reply. And if people would have just listened carefully and intently to what the Fed had been saying, they'd recognize some things that are already in motion and have been in motion for some time that have been the primary driver behind what markets have done. And, you know, anyone that might be listening to us for the very first time, Sean, first of all, thank you. Welcome. I'm hopeful that you'll learn some things about macro along the way, and more importantly, about investing and how to protect yourself, your family, and your hard-earned capital. But one of the things that is incredibly valuable as it relates to our process is simply following a model and methodology that helps us to understand when and where growth and inflation are both accelerating or decelerating. And then identifying that helps us to front run the Fed. And that's how we were able to come up with the process of letting people know, hey, look, this whole cycle is going to be very different. And, you know, I sent an email to a client here very recently, commenting about, hey, look, this market has given many people more than a couple opportunities to get themselves out, albeit down for many people who are still attempting to get out, but misunderstanding how much more might actually be might be coming. And I said, look, the Fed's not screwing around. They've made it painfully clear that they are very, very serious about killing inflation. And the only way they know how to do that is to keep pushing the rate limit and to keep contracting the money supply. And if you think of the money supply, think of it as gasoline in a fuel-burning engine that is the market. You take away the gasoline, that car doesn't run real well.
No.
Same kind of thing here with markets. When you start taking away the gasoline, the money supply, it doesn't run real well. You know, and literally, a couple of things that really stuck out to us here very, very recently, like over just the last couple of weeks, specifically since I'm just talking about money supply, M2, which again is essentially cash deposits and then time deposits less than $100,000 each, which obviously amounts to a very, very, very big number. But the money supply is now down year over year for the very first time in 60 years, 60. John, I don't know many people that are in the process of actively managing money who have had to deal with that kind of an environment. And that's the one thing that I think investors have just sadly and painfully very, very, very seriously missed in 2022, that one, the Fed does control the gasoline in the engine. Number two, it's important to front run what the Fed is doing. And number three, they're serious. Most people have believed that the Federal Reserve absolutely, no matter what, always comes to the rescue, right? It starts pouring gasoline in the engine when markets start to hit that, quote, bear market, right? 20% or whatever ridiculous number that people on TV want to talk about all the time. And that's not, I don't think, going to prove to be true here in the next maybe quarter. So what does that mean? Well, you know, when you've got money supply actually down on a year-over-year basis and decelerating for the first time in 60 years, what that screams at us is that quantitative tightening, right? The removing of the punch pull from the investment party is not just in motion, but the Federal Reserve is now going around to all these drunken party goers saying, hey, all that punch you drank, we want that back. Now, that's a terrible perspective, right?
Yes.
That's a terrible visual, a terrible image. But, you know, at the same time, when you think about markets throwing up, this is what's happening, right? And it's happening on the backs of a profit recession. The profit recession isn't even close to being priced into the market yet. Most people are sitting back and saying, oh, you know, the supply chain is going to slowly fix itself and, you know, it's all going to be okay. It'll be great. And, you know, everything's going to just be hunky-dory again. Well, not really. Again, these things aren't priced into the system yet. The sales, you know, the data points that we've gotten here just even over the last week. Like, for example, when you think of sales numbers, so the U.S., and this is true across the spectrum of Europe and all sorts of different places throughout the world today, but the U.S. ushered in last week a very underwhelming 0% PCE, which is the consumer type of expenditure number that the Fed pays attention to. So PCE growth was 0%. And it's on the backs of the largest sequential decline in durable goods orders since the pandemic.
Talking with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management online, careformywealth.com. That's all one word, careformywealth.com. And the telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. Before I interrupted you there, Chris, you were about to talk about Japan. I apologize.
No worries. Yeah. So Japan, of course, greets investors with this negative retail sales growth and what was literally the worst print in 5 months. And we talked last week ad nauseum about what they're doing with their currency and some of the problems that likely will create with what's called a carry trade. But then you've got the spending pulse. What's the spending pulse? MasterCard and Visa credit card data, right? We don't ever trade or invest off of credit card data, but we use it just to give us an inclination into an acceleration or deceleration from the consumer standpoint. And when you look at the MasterCard spending pulse data, it shows that holiday spending was up a full 0% on a real basis. That's not what most people expected. Most people expected, to some extent, if you listen to how at least the talking heads on TV want to frame it, like, oh, the holiday sales are going to be fine and it's going to end up working out and, you know, earnings are going to look great. Well, no, it's not. We already know that the consumer is stretched. We know that not just by the spending data that we're getting and the consumer expenditure item that I talked about, but the fact that credit card debt's at all-time highs and it's at an all-time high interest rate. So it's painful. It's hurtful. But then you got people saying, well, yeah, but what about retail sales? I mean, come on, retail sales in October were better than expected. Doesn't that mean that we're bottoming? Doesn't that mean that the turn is already here? Good question. Well, let's tear that up a little bit. Let's look inside that. If you look at what the reality was, California chose to fight inflation by issuing stimulus checks. Let that sink in for just a moment. They're going to fight inflation by creating inflation? In other words, spending more? I mean, come on, it just doesn't make any sense. So you've got some global central banks, Japan, I've already talked about them both last week and a little bit now, in Spain, where they literally blinked. You know, they're in the process of tightening policy, but yet at the same time doing more quantitative easing in terms of buying government bonds for them. You know, Japan, Japanese government bonds, and in Spain, they're buying government bonds. That's a really weird combination. I mean, these are the kinds of things that haven't happened literally in, ever, right? Ever's a long time. And, you know, you talk about a long time, and we talked about that money supply. You know, the Fed is serious. The Fed is absolutely serious. They're taking away the punch bowl. M2 money supply. Again, this is so valuable and so important for people to understand when trying to identify a macro viewpoint. And that macro viewpoint should be your guiding star in terms of how do I invest and what do I invest in and when. And if you have a macro process that helps you to understand what the Fed's actions are and will be, it will keep you in front of them. Whether they're taking away the punch bowl or adding to it, what matters is that you can identify it. And right now, this M2 money supply, again, cash deposits plus time deposits less than $100,000, which, again, that's a lot of money. That's a big, 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 big number. That number is down on a year-over-year basis, Sean, for the first time in 60 years. I mean, I can't say that enough. 60 years. There aren't many people who are actively managing the investment world today who have had to live through that. And so now we've got this environment where the Federal Reserve is absolutely taking away the punch bowl. That monetary policy thing is a big, big deal. And helping people to recognize that last November, December, into January, when markets started to really turn into bear market mode, the market was just identifying the fact that the Fed was in fact serious and was in fact going to tighten to the point that it was going to make most risk investments and bonds for that matter, because of the inflation problem, a problem. My hope back November, December, January was that that macro process helped to guide some people away from what the storm was. People now, of course, are saying, well, is the storm over? No, it absolutely isn't. And again, it's a function of what's going on a global scale, right? Japan is a big deal. And I know that may not mean a lot to most people, but they're a very, very big country in terms of economics, and they're a debt bomb. And we talked about that last week. Mm-hmm. They're a debt bomb. China's a debt bomb. And it's just a function of when that debt bomb actually is a problem for the market. But Japanese industrial production accelerated down 1.3% year over year. South Korean business confidence fell. Okay, those aren't good things. And South Korea is valuable too, obviously, from a semiconductor and chip type perspective, as is, you know, areas in Taiwan. But then you start looking at all the concurrent indicators that are going on global activity along with domestic profit cycle. It's all down. I mean, Japanese machine tool orders are down 7%, almost 8% year over year. South Korean exports are down almost 14% year over year. Singapore electronic exports are down over 20% year over year. Taiwan electronic exports are down over 15% year over year. And then you take the darling of the world, Tesla. I mean, this thing's like got a casual $1 trillion decline in its bubble market cap. And it's probably not done. People have asked me all the time, Chris, do you think Twitter's going to go under 100? And my answer is, yeah. Do a mean reversion analysis on Twitter once, and it's not a far-fetched story to consider it trading at $25 a share. Now, I just heard the whole environment of the listening audience with this dreaded gasp.
Yep.
Right? And for anyone who doesn't recognize that was probably a dreaded gasp, is the lack of recognition of major funds having very large positions in all those bubble cap names. Tesla, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Meta, right on down the line. That hasn't changed, right? Nothing has changed in that regard. And so because of that, those kinds of things have a setup into the market environment that when you apply what's happening with money supply, being in contraction mode is a very, very, very dangerous environment, right? Another thing that happened this past week that I thought was stunning to some extent, there were zero Fed bids in the two-year Treasury auction.
What does that mean? It
means that nobody wanted to buy two-year bonds.
Ooh.
Why? Because everybody's anticipating interest rates, at least market participants, right? Pros looking at this saying, hey, that whole interest rate cycle, that ain't done. The two-year Treasury is a very, very quick and easy read on what the Fed's likely to do, right? Well, the Fed's not done raising rates yet. They're not done tightening monetary policy yet. And so what do you got? We're back to bullish trends for the 30-year bond yields, 10-year bond yields, two-year bond yields. That is not the stuff of a bull market in stocks. That is definitely not the stuff of a bull market in bonds. And we've talked over the last couple of weeks why we've not taken positions recently in anything in Treasury bond cycle, because typically those are good positions for a quad four growth decelerating type of an environment where we're headed into a recession. Mm-hmm. But the bond market says, nope, too much volatility and the Fed ain't done. Okay, fine, good news. Our macro star is going to keep us away from that train wreck, and it has. And so when you've got that going on, and then the Dallas Fed, you know, extended their streak of, you know, big losses, big L's out of their regional survey kind of thing. Their regional Fed survey just came out this past week, and it dropped another 4 points to a reading of under 20. And then you had some comments that says, hey, you know, recession is now being planned for and acted upon. Really? No, market's not seeing that. You guys aren't doing anything in anticipation of a quote recession. Our perspective is that the recession's already here. It's already in motion. Market hasn't priced it in, not even close. The same way that the market's not priced in profit recession for major, especially tech companies. And the same way that the Fed's going to be late to the party, the same way that they were late to the party when it came to quote in transitory inflation. They're always late. They're always late to cut. They're late to raise. They're late to do everything in monetary policy land. And so if you listen to them and if you front run them, again, I'm going to repeat Stephen Covey. People don't listen with the intent to understand. They listen with the intent to reply. Don't do that with the Fed. Listen to what they're saying, and it'll help you build your macro process to the point that will keep you in front of what the Fed's doing. At some point, the Fed's going to flip. Right?
Mm.
But it's not yet. And the one thing that the Fed is painfully aware of is that back in the days of Fed governor, Fed chair at the time, Volcker, he flipped too soon. He gave up. He blinked. He did what Spain and Japan did. He started to add fuel back to the fire before the inflation monster, the inflation genie, however you want to view it, was put back in the bottle. Powell knows he can't make that mistake. Because if he makes that mistake and he ends up pivoting or flipping too early and starts putting gas into the engine before the inflation genie's back in the bottle, 2024 is going to be an abject train wreck because inflation is going to really start to rip again. He knows this. He's not dumb. But their macro structure is set up in such a way that keeps them late and lagging. And that's the one thing that investors have to understand. That they're serious and that their models simply don't function well within a macro viewpoint. So if there's any one takeaway that I hope somebody understands with regards to not only how 2022 has ended, but the high and rising likelihood of how 2023 is going to progress, at least in Q1 and probably into Q2, this M2 supply system, right? The money supply now being down year over year for the first time in 60 years, quantitative tightening is progressing. As that process and that progress continues to create dysfunction in markets, it ends up leading into a credit event. And that credit event is one of those catalysts that in most cases, at least historically, can generate some pretty serious panic, right?
Yeah.
How does that credit event look? How does it manifest itself? It's hard to say. But when you've got a deceleration in profit to the extent that we roll into a pretty deep recession while the Fed's raising interest rates and taking the punch bowl away, taking money supply down, that creates an environment where junk bonds or companies that are on the bubble in terms of profitless tech with a lot of debt, where they're using a lot of revenue that they might be generating. Notice I said revenue and not profit.
Yeah.
But using a lot of revenue to pay that debt. Well, then what happens when they can't pay the debt? You know, this is why you start looking at how companies progress through into a recession. They cut the easy stuff first. What's the easy stuff? Advertising. Sure. That's the easiest one, right?
Yep.
Well, digital advertising is a big deal. Oh, well, guess what? Facebook and Google are getting, you know, monkey hammered here over the past year. Yeah, I guess that makes sense since they're cutting advertising left and right. The last thing that these companies want to cut is employment. It's been hard for most companies to pick up good employees and then maintain them. And it's just a function of the dysfunction that the whole shutdown created, right? The whole supply chain environment. Companies are getting more comfortable with getting rid of some people, Sean. And that's a sad commentary. It's not something that I look forward to. It's not something that I revel in. But the last thing to tick always is employment. And at the end of every single cycle, employment looks amazing. And it keeps the Fed on the wrong side of the equation too long until that number really starts to accelerate. So we're in this kind of an environment, we're in this kind of situation where at least right now for Q1, it doesn't appear that the Fed wants to change direction because they're pretty confident, at least based on what interest rates are saying, that inflation's not dead yet. And it's really not. I mean, you know, look at how metals, copper and some industrial metals have kind of moved back into a bullish mode. I mean, there's lots of things that are happening underneath the surface of price that that goes unnoticed, right? One of the things that has absolutely gone unnoticed, and I'll talk about this in more detail because I know we got a break coming, but it's volatility. And I think it's important for people to understand where we are in the volatility cycle to help them understand, hey, look, this is abnormal. And when normality actually starts to set in, some things start to change.
We'll talk volatility. We will do that next. Of course, what happens next globally, probably don't have a lot to control over, but you do have a lot locally for yourself and preparing for the future. Today is the day as we look to 2023. Today is the day to contact Chris, start that conversation. All you got to do is give him a call, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886 for Chris Klein and Cap Stone Wealth Management, the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. You can learn more about Chris and his team right there. Again, today is the day to pick up the phone, give him a call, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. We'll talk volatility with Chris. We will do that next as Care for My Wealth here on Fox Sports 1070. The game continues. This is Care for My Wealth right here on Fox Sports 1070. The game, hanging out this Saturday morning, this New Year's Eve, with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. Of course, a lot of us looking forward to 2023, putting 2022 behind us. Obviously, there were a lot of great things in this past year, but also some things that are very concerning. And if you're one of those people that are saying, you know what, time to plan for the future, I'm going to make it my day, I'm going to make it my year, today is the day to pick up the phone, give Chris a call, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. You can learn more about Capstone Wealth Management on the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. And Chris, you mentioned volatility before the break, and it obviously, when it comes to volatility, you can win with volatility, you can lose with volatility. It's something that's present and you need to be paying attention to. Let's talk a little bit about where we are and really what you're seeing with volatility and VIX trading.
Yeah, good question and good perspective. You know, so volatility broadly viewed through the context of VIX, right? Broad S&P volatility has been very weird this year. And we've commented more than a couple of times how it's our perspective and a lot of other very big professional investors who are seeing what's been taking place in VIX throughout the entire year and saying this thing is being artificially suppressed. I don't know who by who, but it would be someone or something very, very big and it might be a multitude of actors and players in the system that are doing it. But all I can say is this. You take a look at what's taken place in markets in general over this year, right? And you can look at whatever you want. You can look at the S&P 500 down essentially 20% on the year. You can take a look at the NASDAQ essentially down about 34% on the year. And yet VIX is only trading at 21, 20, 22. I mean, come on. A market down that percentage typically would have VIX easily mid-30s, maybe higher, mid-40s. And yet it's not. Why? The fear hasn't set in yet. People have just casually been like, okay, with a 20% decline or a 35% decline in their portfolio. John, I can't tell you how many instances I've gotten emails from people who are considering hiring us and are sharing their current 401k positions and what's gone on with them in their 401k. And they're down 25, 35%.
Wow.
And there's concern there, but I don't know that I would call it fear. So for us, when we look at what's happening in the context of VIX, right, S&P volatility, it confirms that. And I think it's just a function of what we've been talking about so far here in this in today's show is that, you know, people are expecting the Federal Reserve to just ride to the rescue. People have become so complacent with, well, it'll come back. Okay, fine. Maybe it does. But how long does it take? I mean, look, if you're down 25%, you need a substantial number to come back. If the market blows up and you're down 50, you need 100% just to get back to black. How long does that take? Does that take a year? I don't know. 100% return in a year is pretty darn good, I think. Does it take 5 years? Does it take longer? I don't know. Too many people are, to some extent, I believe, in a midst of recency bias, where they recently look at how the Fed has responded and reacted to market decline and said, they're going to solve the problem. They're going to rejuice the punch bowl. They're going to put the gas in the engine, you know, whatever metaphor you want to use, and everything will be fine. Markets come back. Hallelujah. Everybody's making money again. I don't know, Sean. I think Powell has made it painfully clear that they're just simply not screwing around with this thing, and they are not going to give up till the inflation genie is dead. and I said, you know, I don't know if you remember me saying this, but this is well over a year ago where I said, look, the Fed has tried for years and years and years to essentially generate some inflation. And I said, you got to be careful with this, because when that inflation genie is out of the bottle, it's really, really, really hard to put back in. I think the Fed's finding that to be the truth. Now, is it going to happen? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we already see, to some extent, inflation on the margins decelerating, but it's decelerating very, very slowly. And it's decelerating over the next year to where it's still 100% above what the Fed's target is. How do we know that? Because we know what the components of CPI are, and we know what the calculations are on a lead lag basis and how they impact the CPI data. You can get a pretty good estimation of what CPI is likely to be 2 to 3 quarters out if you just know what the calculations are and you just know what the components are. Well, we do. All right, well, that shows going into Q4 of 2023, the data still shows a CPI number that could very easily be 100% above what the Fed's target is. The Fed's target's 2% CPI. The data suggests that we could very easily still be at 4%. Now, is that to suggest that the Fed would be at that point willing to accept inflation higher for even longer? I doubt it. They've made it painfully clear through their comments within their meetings recently, and of course the press conferences that they've had afterward, that hey, look, you know, you got to be ready for interest rates to be higher for longer. I mean, that's the comment: higher for longer. Okay. That's not good. Right. We also know that used cars are decelerating very rapidly. I mean, I don't know. I suppose if you're looking for a bright point, unless you're a car dealer, there it is.
Sure. Yeah.
You're going to be able to buy a used car for some pretty good deals, you know, over the next couple of months. I mean, the speed at which used cars have decelerated has been exceedingly rapid. And so that being said, for someone who's in that market, it might work out okay for them. You know, how does that affect car dealers? Well, probably not so great, right? And so some of the big questions that I think, you know, are kind of jarring our minds as we work into the beginning stages of 2023, can deglobalization and inflation targets that are associated with that peak globalization coexist? Do those things function together? Are they able to be viewed in context with one another and in concert with one another? Good question. Can housing affordability just really improve materially if supply falls faster than demand? Probably not. And that's certainly something that we've got a very careful and close eye on. How about leverage? And leverage comes in a lot of different forms, right? And immediately when we think of leverage, we're thinking of leverage of margin and, you know, taking out loans on homes and all that sort of stuff. But is increased leverage for labor a positive if it means that inflation is high or sticky high, right? Just stays higher for longer, which is a net negative for purchasing power, by the way, for most people. But can we look at increased leverage for labor as a positive if it means inflation is high, right? I mean, that affects purchasing power for most people. So, and most of the people for supplying that labor too, right? Fragility comes in a lot of different ways, and it manifests itself on the fringes, and then it metastasizes inward. In the present case, right now, we're seeing this very, very acute fragility within what we would call high beta or high risk, unprofitable type environments, unprofitable companies. I talked about profitless tech, and the problems that are created within that sector. There are a lot of companies that trade in the open market today, Sean, that literally make no money. Zombie companies, you know, whatever you want to call them, I don't care, but they're out there. Okay, well, that's kind of set to move up the quality hierarchy, because as those conditions deteriorate further and the main thrust of higher interest rates kind of makes its way through Main Street, it just starts to hit real economic activity. So, you know, can we really see this inward movement reverse as long as we're in this deceleration of growth as the prevailing macro environment? I don't know, that doesn't make me feel super comfortable, right? I mean, at least anyone who says, I'm a bull because I know the Fed's going to pivot. Well, okay, yeah, I get it. At some point they will, but to what extent and when? And when is just as important as how much, because when might mean another 20% from now to the downside, right? Here's the last question that we keep asking ourselves. Is if liquidity is contracting, can the stuff that's priced in that liquidity really inflect? Stocks, bonds, commodities, liquidity is and has always been the main driver of risk-based assets. You got to have liquidity. Well, illiquidity has become the norm. And the Fed's doing it on purpose, because why? They want and have said demand destruction. They want to reduce demand so that they can have an impact on the cost of inflation. So that liquidity question remains, you know, the most top down and both the most simple and maybe the most important question of all. You know, is a financialized and very leveraged global economy more than just a single factor model that's anchored on liquidity when that liquidity is experiencing really outsized moves? Again, if liquidity is contracting, again, M2, spendable credit, they're both declining. What happens to stuff priced in that liquidity? Profits, asset prices, et cetera, right? Hmm. Those are the big questions. And so I get it. People look at the market and say, all right, it's kind of blown up. It's down 20 to 35%, depending upon the market you look at. Fed's going to rescue. It's all good. But look, that's not what's happening underneath the surface of price. And it's absolutely not what's happening or telling us as it relates to how investors are viewing that move through the lens of volatility. And if you look at through the lens of volatility, in most cases, when markets have declined to the extent that they've declined now, fear is way higher. Well, guess what you don't get when there's not a lot of fear in the market? You don't get an inflection. Bear markets don't end when people don't have fear. Bear markets end when people are scared to death, panicked, pandemonium, chaos, all that stuff that's going on. That's when bear markets start to end. And sadly, through the lens of volatility, how we started this particular segment, we're just not seeing that yet. And again, I don't like to be the bearer of negative news. I want to be positive. I want to look at good, wonderful things that are happening. But at the same point, I'm looking at this saying, my job is to tell you reality. My job is to tell you how this stuff is affecting global markets and what's likely to be the outcome over at least the next couple of months, or maybe a couple of quarters, and then find a way to help you manage through that. And that's why last November, December, and January, we told every single one of our clients that are still working, who had 401ks, I parroted it on this show over and over and over again. Look, protect yourself. Use a cash balance fund. Use something that doesn't have market risk to it. That includes bonds. It's just not at a point where it's going to give you any cover. Wait for the storm to blow over. I know it's going to create an impatient environment for you, but you got to do it. I'm still there, Sean. I'm still there. And I can't wait for the day where I can say, hey, guess what? We just saw an inflection. We're ready to roll. I'm not seeing it yet.
it's interesting, too. And for folks, we talk about listening back to the podcast, listening back to a year ago. And just how things have developed and how we've gotten to where we are. And of course, it's important to be tracking this stuff. It's important to be following this stuff. Chris would love to work with you, love to help you out again as we look to the new year. We look to where we are right now and where we've been. Today is a great day to call Chris Klein and the team at Capstone Wealth Management. Telephone number 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. Website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Is there anything out there, Chris, as we talk about some of the stuff, anything out there that you're bullish on right now or anything that you're seeing in that realm?
Yeah, absolutely. Still very bullish on the US dollar. It's trending bullish, which trend time series, price volume and volatility calculated on a 3-month or more basis. So the US dollar is bullish. Healthcare, staples, defense companies and utilities are all bullish trend. Right. So if you've got somebody that says, well, I got to own something that's a stock. OK, fine. Find something in staples. And here's the way it's easy to do. If you want to buy individual stocks, look at XLP and tear it apart and find the best companies in the staples exchange traded fund. Same thing is true for XLV, which is healthcare. Same thing is true for ITA, which is aerospace and defense. And same thing is true for XLU, which are utilities. If you really, really, really absolutely have to own something in stock space, you want to pick those things that are trading, bullish trade, bullish trend on a time series that are at least in the top portions of those four exchange traded funds because they're all bullish trade and trend themselves. Now, that said, if volatility breaks and whoever has been artificially suppressing it decides to not do that anymore, mm-hmm. and volatility goes where it probably should be, those aren't going to work either, John. And that's, again, just a function of how volatility affects price for all things equity once it blows up above 30. You get that? And those things that I just mentioned, they're not going to work either. So it's fine to be in those. And it's definitely something that right now, while VIX stays below 30, will work. I mean, if you take a look at how just those four things have done over the past 3 months, and again, we view it on a 3-month basis for a trend. Staples are up 10.3% over the last 3 months. Healthcare is up 11% over the last 3 months. Aerospace and defense is up 21.3% over the last 3 months. And utilities are up 19.7% over the last 3 months. So it's not that there's nowhere where you can pick up equity exposure if you absolutely want it. It's just that you have to have the right macro perspective to push you into those things that work when the macro cycle is doing its thing. Cycles will cycle, right? And as they cycle, you can be on the right side of it or the wrong side of it. And being on the wrong side of it can be a very dangerous environment when you take it through the context and the lens of where volatility sits, and more importantly, what's happening with liquidity and how the Fed's controlling money supply.
Talking this morning with Chris Klein, Capstone Wealth Management, the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. You can also follow Chris on Twitter at careformywealth. The telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. 866-596-9886. And Chris, before we wrap this week, of course, tomorrow we start a brand new year. Any thoughts for 2022? And of course, any optimism when it comes to 2023? What should people be looking at there?
Yeah, first and foremost, there is optimism for 2023. And it's only because we understand that if you have a go anywhere strategy that can play both sides of the fence, long or short, there are opportunities that will arise even within the worst of the bear markets. And that's one of the things that we try to view as a positive when you understand global macro, is that there's a bull in a bear market somewhere always. It's recognizing it and taking advantage of it as those things present themselves. And so that's first and foremost. We're going to get through this particular bear market cycle. We always do. It's just not yet. And so I want everybody to recognize that. In terms of 2022, number one, I'm very thankful for everybody that's taken time to listen into our show. I hope that it's been helpful for you. And Sean, specifically, I want to thank you for your flexibility and your loyalty in terms of helping out the show and doing a great job as hosting it for me. So I appreciate it. You make my showtime much easier to deal with than if I had to blather all my own.
Well, thank you too, Chris. I know that this year there's been so much going on, and I know the folks that get a chance to listen to us regularly and get a chance to check out the podcast or listen on the air. Such great, valuable information. And it really shows, I mean, when we talk about this stuff each and every Saturday morning, this is important stuff. And when we look at what's been going on this past year, it's never too late to make that next step. It's never too late to look forward as we look forward to 2023. It's never too late to start the year off right. Pick up the phone, give Chris a call. He'd love to talk with you, love to get to know you again. All you got to do is call 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. You can also learn more online, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Of course, this is Care for My Wealth here on Fox Sports 1070 The Game. Chris, you have a fantastic new year and look forward to talking to you again in 2023.
Yes, you too. Happy, healthy, prosperous, and content new year. That last one was added in memory of a very good client, and I was reminded by her husband this year that that's a good word to use when wishing new year. And I said, yeah, you're right. So well, happy, healthy, prosperous, content new year.
Well stated. This is Care for My Wealth right here on Fox Sports 1070 The Game.